morning and welcome to Family Life. Your host, Salima Muhammad and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent Mirage Deep. This is Nadia Muhammad, in the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. I greet the listening audience in the peace of As-Salaamu Alaikum. This week's discussion, harmful effects of prescription drugs. Dr. Nadia Muhammad, welcome!
Thank you. As-salamu alaykum. It's an honor as well as a privilege to be graced by your presence on the radio broadcast, as well as I am appreciative of the presence of your very esteemed audience.
Yes, ma'am. An important subject this morning. I'll begin with the first question. Why do you think that it is so important to bring awareness to the people about the dangers of prescription drugs?
You know, thank you, Sister Salima, for the question. I think it's a very important question. I think it's quite important to bring awareness to people in general about the dangers of prescription drugs because, you know, unfortunately, Sister Salima, we live in a culture of corruption and greed, and we want instant gratification. And so one of the key players that feeds on that culture of greed and the need for instant gratification is the pharmaceutical industry. And so while pharmaceutical sales and profits soar, people are hurting and dying on a daily basis. And, you know, it's really a shame because not only do pharmaceutical companies, you know, they receive substantial U.S. government assistance in the form of public funding.
I thought you were asleep.
Pharmaceutical companies receive tax breaks. However, they continue to charge exorbitant prices for medication. You know, and they also, let me be clear, they also work on getting physicians to prescribe them as well. So this
an emergency. He's
very,
not
very
sick,
time.
But I got him sure it was his parents.
Culture of corruption and greed.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do I mean by that? You know, so what do I mean by that? Time will become a victim. So time will become victims. And so if you play in a sandbox of the U.S. healthcare system, you become a victim of that system. And so what do I mean by that? So we live in a society, again, where we want instant satisfaction and gratification. When we're not feeling well, right?
We are next
when
week.
When we're not at our optimal health, we want relief, right? When you're not feeling well. And you want it pretty quickly. And so, you know, generally, traditionally, we turn to what we're accustomed to, and that is to turn to modern medicine, in which we have to agree, in which there is a full supply of every ailment known to man. And so as new medicines come into the market for alleviating symptoms, they're heavily marketed and advertised to television and other media outlets, raising our awareness of the conditions they treat. And so as a society, you know, as a result, we have grown up in a society associating medicine with solving problems. And so I want to be frank with you, and I'll be quite candid. I'm here to tell you that this approach has been devastating. It can be devastating when you don't know what you're looking at when it comes to making your healthcare decisions. And so, essentially, if you play in the sandbox of the U.S. healthcare system, again, you become a victim in the sandbox of the U.S. healthcare system. And so how do we become victims? Well, we want prescription drugs to relieve pain, discomfort, and distress. We rely on prescription drugs to treat various ailments. And quite frankly, we rely on drugs to help us deal with life stress. You know, we are a nation of tired people. We rely on drugs to give us energy. We rely on drugs to wake us up. We rely on drugs to help us fall asleep because, we can't sleep. We're thinking about what we need to do tomorrow for work or what we're going to cook for our children or whatever the issue may be, we're thinking about it. Or we can't find work, right? And we're worried about how we're going to pay for rent. How are we going to feed our children? How are we going to feed ourselves? And in general, how are we going to pay our bills? And so this is real. This is a very real situation. And while people are feeling the deleterious effects of unemployment and just not being able to take care of themselves, we get depressed. And so we need drugs to treat our depression. And, you know, we live in a society, you know, where, you know, for black people in particular, We have a Black employment rate that is twice as high as white people. And so we have these socioeconomic stresses that causes anxiety and depression in the Black community. Now, I'm not saying it's just in the Black community. It's in our Latino community. It's in all communities. And so we're dealing with these issues. And so we need prescriptions. Many of us feel that we need prescriptions to alleviate our anxiety and our depression. And so I think these conversations are important. This is something that we need to talk about. We need to really, really, really deal with this as far as our community. And then I'm going to take this a little step further. You know, looking at this from a different angle, I talk to different audiences all the time, and we have a student audience that also listens. And so in some cases, you know, for our students who are in college, they need to stay awake. They need to remain alert. And this is a really serious problem that we haven't been talking about in our society. Our students, you know, they need to concentrate, and they need to be able to focus on their schoolwork. And what we have is what we're finding now, students are now taking stimulants to keep them awake. And so to be honest with you, or to stay focused. And so according to a study published by Microsoft back in 2015, it was noted that the average human being had an attention span of 8 seconds. And so, you know, it's getting really bad. You know, you hear more cases of adults getting ADHD. You have enormous amount of children who have ADHD. And so, you know, the doctors are prescribing the stimulants more and more and more, and it's becoming a problem. And so when you go to doctors through the various permutations of illnesses, physical or mental, let's be clear, it's natural to want to walk out the doctor's office with a prescription. However, what many people are not aware of is how unsafe, I'm going to say this again, what people aren't aware of is that these drugs are unsafe and they're dangerous, okay, and it's unnatural. Really, it really is unnatural, and it boils down between life and death. It's really your life that you want to choose over death. And so, really, your life, if you allow it, is in the hands of your physician. And so we have to be more accountable. We have to take our lives into our own hands. And so from a historical vantage point, this is how it has always been in this country. There's a book that I'm going to recommend to listening audience. I recommend that you purchase a book called, Murder by Injection, The Story of the Medical Conspiracy Against America by Eustathius Mullins. So he goes into how the American Medical Association was formed and the U.S. healthcare system was formed, and how bureaucratic forces directly affected the health of every U.S. citizen. So, yes, Sister Sloan, that's a question, very good question, and I wanted to give you some background on why I think that drugs are dangerous.
Yes, if you would please, thank you very much. If you would please mention the name of the book again and the author.
Yes. The name of the book is called The Story, it's called Murder by Injection, Story of the Medical Conspiracy Against America by Eustathius Mullins. And so what I can do is at the end of this broadcast, I can give out my personal email address. If there are any listeners on the phone and you're interested in purchasing the book, I will send you the name of the book and author.
Excellent. Thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Are there other factors that lead to the need for prescription drug use?
Yes. So when I speak to people, I often serve as a health consultant to some of my clients. I often hear people say to me, you know, I need my prescription drugs to treat heart disease, diabetes, hypertension, and a host of other conditions. And, you know, and I find that people generally believe that all they need is a prescription for a new medical drug, right? That they feel that's all they need. But in essence, all that they need is a change in diet, they need a change in lifestyle, and their connection with their creator. I really believe that. So I want to briefly talk about the impact of unhealthy eating habits and sedentary lifestyle factors that lead to the need for prescription drugs. In the first place, right? So people feel, oh, you know, I have heart disease. I'm not telling anybody to, you know, stop taking their medication. I'm not telling you to do that. But I do want to go through some factors that I believe that, you know, play a role in some of these deleterious effects of these different diseases. So in terms, you know, and I want to be speaking from the vantage point of the Black community, if I may. So in terms of unhealthy eating habits from a historical perspective, you know, as a people, we have adopted slavery influenced diets. And we know that that's soul food, right? And soul food, as we know, originated during the time of slavery. Slave owners reserved the best nutritional foods for themselves. In the case of black slaves, the worst nutritional food, such as leftovers and scraps. And so, for example, and I'm going to reference this book often, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad points out in his book, How to Eat to Live, Volume 1, page 4, he states, peas, collard greens, turnip greens, sweet potatoes, and white potatoes are very cheaply raised. Southern slave masters used them to feed the slaves and still advise the consumption of them. Caucasian people of the middle and upper class do not eat this lot of cheap food, which is unfit to human consumption. So if you want to learn more about prolonging your life by changing your dietary lifestyle, I strongly recommend that you purchase the book How to Eat to Live, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. You can order the large body of work on How to Eat to Live by visiting www.finalcall.com/store. There's also another book that I recommend to learn about diabetes. It's called The Diabetes Code, and it is by Dr. Jason Fung. I do recommend that's another book that I will recommend to learn about how to treat your diabetes in a holistic manner. Now getting back to unhealthy eating habits, I want to speak about this in terms of, you know, present-day perspective, contemporary, from a contemporary perspective. We know that racial inequalities and disparities impact overall health of black people in America and Latino people in underserved communities in general, specifically those who live in low-income neighborhoods of a lower socioeconomic status and who have less access to quality food. So, for instance, if you live in a low-income neighborhood, there would not be a common for a person to generally rely on convenience stores, right? In a black community, a low-income community, there's like a liquor store on every corner, a gas station on every corner. And people generally rely on those places for snacks and meals. And so without the availability of fresh produce and quality meat, the vast majority of black families in poor neighborhoods are forced to build their diets on that food, to be quite frank with you, that are not readily available to them. And so this includes what? Processed foods, right? Fast foods, McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, Burger King, carbonated drinks such as soda juices, or really bad, old, or bad cup of meat. The foods that are generally rich in starch, such as pasta, rice, and things like that. And so let's not forget about the artificial sweeteners too, right? And the bottomless cups of coffee, right, filled with sugar that we so love to consume, as well as the consumption of, you know, unhealthy saturated fats, like our beloved fried chicken that we love to eat and fried fish. So as often as a people, we miss some of the essential food groups, such as fruits and vegetables, which, you know, are needed to provide your body with the necessary minerals and vitamins that are needed to maintain good nutrition. And proteins are also needed to help your body to repair itself. And so these unhealthy eating habits rob our bodies of the vital nutrients that are needed to maintain a healthy immune system. And so we don't have a healthy immune system. It prevents us from maintaining our immune system, obviously, right? Prevents us from maintaining a proper hormone balance, which is very, very important for establishing and maintaining a good mental status, as well as preventing disease. So essentially, when you're eating the wrong foods, basically foods that tear down our health instead of foods that strengthen and build up our health, we don't have that to fall back on. So as a result, what do we do, right? We need drugs to triage our health problems. So we think we have diabetes, and we do have high blood sugar, I'm sure. But most of it is because of diet, not because some people say it's hereditary. And there's plausibility to that, but that's something I'll discuss in another show on the next separate cover. But the drug generally is designated to treat symptoms and really to be honest with you and not treat the root cause of disease. And the root cause of most diseases I find in my studies can be cured. So I say this again. The root cause of most diseases can be cured by changes in dietary lifestyle. So essentially, what are we doing to ourselves? So from a generational standpoint, we're passing down the same unfavorable eating habits from generation to generation, stemming from slavery, without realizing that this style of food and cooking is killing us slowly as a community. And so, you know, I often hear people say, Sister Salima, I have diabetes, heart disease, and hypertension because it's hereditary. It just runs in my family. My mom had diabetes, and that's why I had it. Or my dad had heart disease and high cholesterol, and that's why I have it. It just goes on. But I'm going to be honest with you. I don't totally agree with that. Because unhealthy dietary habits are passed down from one generation to the next. The habits can be broken, but genetic factors cannot. And so I want to be clear, there are some people that are predisposed to certain diseases based on genetic factors. So I'm not discounting that, okay? And we see that in some forms of breast cancer. And so, you know, like for instance, there's about between 5 to 10% of breast cancer cases that are thought to be hereditary, meaning that they result directly from gene mutation. And so most common causes of both hereditary breast cancers are inherited from a mutation, the BRCA1/BRCA2 gene. So I'm not discounting that. I want to be clear to the listeners and to the audience. Another factor that I want to talk about that contributes to the need for use of prescription drugs in the Black community is that, you know, we live in a sedentary lifestyle. We live a sedentary lifestyle. That's what we do. And this lifestyle has shown to be a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And so the research shows that Black people spend more time engaged in sedentary behaviors than Caucasians, and Black people suffer more disproportionately from a variety of health ailments, including normal obesity on top of the list, hypertension, and diabetes. And so what do we do? What do we do with our time as a people? And generally, as a society, you know, some of our favorite pastimes is holding, what, the TV remote. We have one hand watching Hulu, right? And Netflix, while the other hand is bag of potato chips. So we're doing a lot of sitting with a little exercise, and we're not doing too much other than that. We're watching TV. We're eating, especially with the COVID-19 pandemic. Our lives have changed dramatically, and we're now engaging in lots of physical exercise. So thank you for that additional question. It's a very important one. I wanted to elaborate just a little bit further on that to get a better understanding of why we're in the health position that we're in. And it's not so much hereditary, it's dietary. And I wanted to make that, I wanted to highlight and make that distinction. So thanks for the question.
Yes, and I want to bring a point, a scientific perspective, to your comments on how to eat to live with regard to sweet potatoes and white potatoes and the effects that it have on diet. And the scientific, so I suggest even when you read, you know, to listen on this, how to eat to live, start scientifically understanding what food does. So the sweet potatoes or the white potatoes especially produces a great deal of starch. And what does starch produce? It increases the glucose level, so then elevates the A1C. So you don't want to eat this every day.
This is true.
And this is what was fed to the slaves on a daily basis, which caused the problem. So everything in moderation, that it's not good in the diet per se, especially in sedentary situations, because you're not exercising or burning that. And let me speak about the greens for a minute. Some of them have the nutrients of what people put in it. They put sodium in it. And scientifically, even those type of greens may be warranted to a diet, but scientifically, a specific time of the year, the winter where you can digest. So Honor Elijah Muhammad picked these foods because they're difficult to digest, and specifically at different times of the year. If you study this, it becomes very, very interesting. So if you cannot digest your food, you're not absorbing the daily nutrients. So I wanted to add that, Dr. Muhammad.
Thank you, Sister Salima. I think that's a great commentary and a great addition to the discussion. As you have stated, from a scientific perspective, when we have starches, rice, and pasta, you know, you have starch, which is what converted to sugar. And so when you have an inordinate amount of sugar that's building up the pancreas, you bring the pancreas out. And we know that the pancreas produces a hormone called insulin. And insulin regulates sugar. So if you're constantly putting sugar into your body on a consistent basis through starch, through sugary foods, through carbonated drinks, which has a lot of sugar as well as sodium, and we're speaking about sugar content at this particular juncture, what are you doing? The more you wear out the pancreas, what happens? It wears down, right? It's like anything else. If you continue to use a car without making repairs to it, what happens? Then it wears away. And so that's essentially what happens to the pancreas. It doesn't have the longevity to continue to break down sugars. Insulin is become insulin dependent. And what happens is you have diseases that include such as diabetes and obesity linked to that as well. So again, if you want to learn about the scientific mechanism of diabetes and what it does to pancreas, the body in general, you know, what it does to your arteries, what it does to your body fat, what it does to your eyes, your entire body, you know, for us to know what a hemoglobin A1C is, how that, you know, assess through you going to the primary care physician and they're taking the sugar level. And then they're saying, hey, I want you to come back in 3 months. I'm going to take a look at your hemoglobin A1C, which shows how well you're controlling diabetes, and it takes 3 months to do that. You need to know it's just not getting the glucose reading in your blood. That doesn't determine on how well your sugar is being controlled. Yes, at the moment it is, right? So we're talking about long-term-wise. So we need to understand a little bit about the mechanism of diabetes. And if you have diabetes and you're on the call, then you want to learn more about, you know, the scientific mechanisms behind how one suffers from diabetes and how it can be, you know, ameliorated, you may want to get Dr. Fung's book again. Jason Fung, The Diabetes Code, and it's a phenomenal read. I've read it several times, and I really, really enjoy it. So, yes, thank you so much for that additional commentary.
After going into the background on how unhealthy eating habits, the sedentary lifestyle in the Black community plays a role in the need to access prescription drugs. Can you go into a little detail on how prescription drugs can cause major health risk?
Yes, that's a very important question. Thank you. Very poignant. And so there are over 170 million people in the United States that are taking prescription drugs. So according to Harvard University Office of Ethics, new prescription drugs have 1 in 5 chance of causing serious reactions after they have been approved by the FDA on a yearly basis. And then you have an additional estimated 5 million people in the United States that visit a physician office or in an emergency room due to side effects related to their prescription medications. And so furthermore, it was noted through some systematic reviews, a meta-analysis was done of hospital charts that found that even properly prescription drugs can cause, have caused, 1.9 million hospitalizations a year. Adverse drug reactions are estimated to result in approximately 3 million hospitalizations each year. And although you may be following doctor's orders and medication labeling instructions, simply taking a prescribed drug as directed by your physician can expose you to a significant risk. Furthermore, it's estimated that over 130,000 people, again, it's estimated that over 130,000 people die from prescribed drugs. So this makes prescribed drugs a major health risk. It ranks as the fourth leading cause of death coupled with stroke. And so let me add this caveat. There's no formal process or research for quantifying injuries, hospitalizations, or even death caused by therapeutic drug use. There are government-funded sources in place for research for diseases such as diabetes and Alzheimer's disease. But I'm going to be clear with you, and with the listening audience, there are no funding resources for research to quantify the harmful effects of prescribed medications. And so now I'd like to take some time, if I can, Sister Salima, unless you have a comment, and to describe the harmful and potentially deadly and serious adverse events that comes with taking prescribed class of medications. So let's describe what an adverse event is. According to the FDA, an adverse event is an undesirable experience associated with the use of medical product in a patient. The event is serious and should be reported to the FDA when the patient outcome is what? So if the patient has an adverse event, it's denoted as a patient who what? Either died from it, or if it's life-threatening as a result of taking a drug. And that, if you suspect death, like if a doctor or a physician's office will suspect that death was an outcome of the adverse event, then you have to include that as a serious adverse event, obviously. If a person is taking a prescribed drug and it's considered life-threatening, either through a device or other medical product that may result in the death of the patient, that's considered a side effect as well. Death, life-threatening. Or if a person takes a prescription drug and it results in disability or permanent damage, that's also considered, a side effect or an adverse event. And so I just wanted to get into some details on what a side effect was, what adverse event was associated with taking a prescribed drug. It's considered either a person will either die from taking a prescribed drug, they may have a life-threatening event, which causes the body from taking a prescribed drug, or it just may become disabled or permanently damaged through neurological event. And we hear a lot about that in children that take certain vaccinations. And taking vaccinations is another subject for another date. I'm not going to get into that because it's a very controversial subject. But that's another subject for another day. And so I wanted to get into some of the classes of drugs and talk about some of the dangers of prescription drugs. And so I wanted to talk about some of the dangers. There's a class of drugs called antipsychotic medication. And these class of drugs are very prevalent in the Black community. We have a lot of Black people who suffer from mental illness. And many of our people are taking medications such as Zyprexa, Seroquel, and Haldol. And many of you who may be on the call, you may be on some of this stuff now. And that's why I'm bringing, the dangers of some of these classes of drugs. And so antipsychotic medications in general have all been associated with causing hallucinations. So these drugs are supposed to treat hallucinations, but as a side effect, it can actually cause hallucinations. So in general, antipsychotics are a class of drugs that are prescribed to treat mental health illnesses, such as bipolar disorders, schizophrenia. These drugs are designed to alter, dopamine from a scientific perspective, noradrenaline, and serotonin neurotransmitters in the brain. And so dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter in the brain, plays a role in how we feel pleasure. And really, it's a big part of our human ability to think and to plan. Noradrenaline is associated with what? Our fight or flight response. Really, as you know, sometimes we perceive danger, fight or flight. Serotonin is a hormone, right, that contributes to our well-being and happiness. And so I wanted to talk about some of the list, go over the list of side effects. We don't have a whole lot of time, so I'm going to go through this quickly. I wanted to talk about some of the dangers or the side effects that ensue when one takes an antipsychotic drug. And so antipsychotic drugs can cause stiffness and shakiness, uncomfortable restlessness, movements of the jaw, lips, and tongue, sexual problems due to hormonal changes. It can cause weight gain, sleepiness, and slowness. A higher risk of getting diabetes, believe it or not. Some of you who have diabetes, it may just be because as a result of you taking prescription drugs, such as Zyprexa, Seroquel, and Haldol. It can also cause constipation. And so I want to be clear and transparent with full disclosure. There are also a number of antipsychotics that have been associated with sudden cardiac death, especially in the elderly population. Those individuals who take cardiac medications in combination with antipsychotic drugs experience cardiac arrest in some cases. And those drugs you want to look out for, if you have your caregiver for an elderly person and they're taking antipsychotic drugs, you want to be careful. And those drugs are Seroquel, Zyprexa, and Respadol. That's also known as Respadol. Also, drugs such as morphine and Aldolol can include risk of sudden death due to cardiac abnormalities, and that's in the label of the drug. So there's also another class of drugs that I wanted to mention that we should all be aware of to be on the lookout for. These class of drugs are called benzodiazepines. Benzodiazepines is a class of medication that has an associated with causes of hallucinations as well. Benzodiazepines, such as Ambien and Ativan. Now, some of you may be on Ambien to help you with your insomnia. Some people also take Ativan to help with anxiety. But both medications, such as Ambien and Ativan, they act as sedatives, right? It slows down the body's functions. And they're both used in general for sleeping problems as well as anxiety. And so if you're on a benzodiazepine, you want to look out for a few side effects. That can be sort of dangerous. You definitely don't want to drive. And it's hard to work when you're on these types of classes of drugs. So some of the side effects that you want to look out for is one, drowsiness, feeling subdued, lightheadedness, confusion, unsteadiness, and gait, slurred speech, muscle weakness, as well as memory problems. So if you're on these medications and you feel subdued, you should want to circle back with the primary care physician to see whether you can transition to a different type of drug. And so also, the anti-anxiety drugs are, you have other drugs that fall into that category. Some of you may be familiar with these. One is called Lunesta, the other is called Sonata, and it belongs to a class of drugs called sedative hypnotics. To be honest with you, these class of drugs can cause memory loss. You want to be very, very careful if you're taking these. They can sometimes cause amnesia, too, and, you know, forgetfulness, of course. And when you have amnesia and forgetfulness, you can't work at full capacity. These class of drugs also, to be honest with you, they could trigger potentially dangerous behaviors, such as you could be in the middle of sleep and sleepwalking, just start cooking a meal and walking away, or driving a car without any recollection of the event upon awakening. And so that's pretty dangerous. You want to be quite, you want to steer yourself clear away from some of these sedative hypnotic drugs, because they could be very dangerous, very, very dangerous. Some of the side effects that are associated with these types of hypnotics are headaches is one, nauseation, of course, because of nauseous, short-term forgetfulness, again, rebound, insomnia, dry mouth, hallucinations, dizziness, drowsiness. There are also some other possible side effects that may include behavior changes, abnormal thinking, and some of these drugs also cause suicidal thinking and ideation. So you want to be clear if you're on, like, a sleeping medication to help you sleep. They have really bad long-term side effects. So if you have some women who are on the call, this is for women only, and men in some cases, but hormone preparation products can cause some serious problems. And in particular, if you're a female and you're on, like, oral contraceptive, that could carry, as you know, some of you may or may not know, it can carry an increased risk of blood clot formation. And so that could be very life-threatening. Those blood clots could break off, could block your heart, causing an embolism, can block form in your brain, cause a stroke, and can block, can form in your lungs and cause a pulmonary embolism. So that's very dangerous. You want to be very clear if you're taking them, you want to make sure that it's part of your treatment plan. It's absolutely necessary. There's also a list of other side effects that are associated with hormone preparation products. Some women experience incessant headaches and migraines. They pretty much don't go away. Some women experience weight gain, noticeable mood changes, as well as changes to eyesight. So you want to be careful if you're on a hormone therapy, even if you're on a hormone therapy replacement. You sort of want to be careful with those. Other medications that I want to briefly mention, I know we're running out of time. You want to be careful with
that. Take your time, doctor. Take your time.
Oh, thank you. I'm not talking fast. And, again, if any of the listening audience have questions, I'm going to give my email in the presentation, and they can surely reach out to me. And if you have questions about anything that I said, perhaps I can elaborate further. But other medications such as Tylenol, Motrin, Aleve, and sulfa drugs, as well as penicillin, barbiturates, they can cause, you know, lots of reactions, like life-threatening hypersensitivity reactions of skin and mucous membranes. And, you know, so many over-the-counter medications can lead to blistering, necrosis, and shedding of the skin. So if you're taking like a Motrin, a Tylenol, penicillin, or any type of sulfa drug, and you have any of these reactions, you may want to consult with your primary care physician to find something else that you can use to kind of like alleviate you of these symptoms. I wanted to mention another class of drugs. They're called anti-estrogens. And so these class of medications, there's many women that I know who have breast cancer. They take these drugs, and one of them is called tamoxifen. And so, interestingly enough, tamoxifen, which is used to treat breast cancer, was actually found in the research to increase the risk of uterine cancer. So while it treats one cancer, it can cause another cancer. And so in response, the FDA required the manufacturer to add black box warnings to inform customers of the risk. And I don't know whether, you know, many consumers are aware of what a black box warning is, but a black box warning is the FDA's most stringent warning for drugs and medical devices on the market. These warnings alert the public and health care providers to certain serious side effects, such as injury or death. And FDA requires drug companies, really, to add a warning label with the medications that have a black box warning. And so, you know, the information in the box must have a header in all caps, jubilant and black, and it's printed in boldface typeface. These warnings notify the public of serious, permanent, or fatal side effects. And so these warnings, you know, historically first appeared on medications in the 70s. And so while drug companies are responsible for creating this information on the drug label, only the FDA has the authority to issue a black box warning. And so once the drug receives it, its manufacturer must also create a medication guide that describes how patients can safely use the drug. And these guides come with medication at the pharmacy and are available online, you know, on the FDA website. And so not only do warnings warn the public, but they also alert doctors and other prescribers to side effects. And so some evidence in the literature suggests that these warnings may go unnoticed by doctors and putting patients at risk. Sometimes the doctors, they're not up on their literature or reading on what's going on with certain drugs, and they'll prescribe it to you. So you have to be your own advocate, is what I'm saying. You must be your own advocate. So I also wanted to add that a black box warning adds to a medication or medical device. You know, you have to be able to show that there's some evidence that the drug poses a significant risk. Okay, and so this evidence often comes from observations and studies that are conducted after a drug has been on the market. So people will, you know, take a drug that has been studied, evaluated to be safe and efficacious, but really the truth is not, right, because it hasn't been on the market long enough to see the side effects and the lasting effects of a particular drug. And in drug development, some drugs are only being tested for maybe a year, 2 or 18 months. So you really, unfortunately, don't know long-term effects that new drugs have on one's body, because really they just hit the market typically, they don't have these warnings, and people who take these drugs may be at risk for developing an unknown side effect. And so that's really unfortunate. So you want to be clear on what you're taking. And you kind of want to ask questions when you meet with your healthcare provider. How long has this drug been in a clinical trial? What are some of the side effects that have been noted? Are there any long-term safety data that, if there are any long-term safety data, then we're available? It's really important to ask about long-term safety data because then you can see trends of what's been seen. When we have new drugs, just you're taking a chance, like you're taking a gamble with your life, so to speak. And so some of the drugs that I want to mention that have these black box warnings, some of the drugs you may be taking right now. And so I just want to mention a few of them, not too many. Abilify is one of those drugs. Abilify is an antipsychotic. It's treated for depression and other mental disorders such as schizophrenia, again, depression, and bipolar disorder. But drug increases the risk of suicidal thoughts and behavior in pediatric patients and young adults taking antidepressants. And so when you have young people who take medications like Abilify, they have the propensity to develop suicidal thoughts and ideation. So if you have a child who's ADHD or is depressed or diagnosed with bipolar and they're on this medication, you may want to look into that because it can cause a serious risk for a person who wants to commit suicide. It's also been noted that there's been an increased risk of death in elderly patients with dementia-related psychosis. And so people, you see a lot of older people who are prescribed Abilify who have dementia for some reason. They're finding that some of these people are just dying. It's unfortunate. And so in May of 2016, there were more than 2,700 patients who experienced these extreme compulsive behaviors. And they filed lawsuits, to be honest with you. So if you know anyone who's taking Abilify and they're having some really, really bad side effects, you may want to let them know that this is a bad drug. It could cause a person to want to kill themselves, and it could cause death and money. And this is especially important for college-bound students. What I find is that there are lots of students who are taking and consuming a drug called Algolol. And Algolol is an amphetamine, right? It's a stimulant. It's a central nervous system stimulant. And it's commonly used for treatment, to be honest with you, for ADHD. And researchers have shown that it's frequently, though, it's used for recreational purposes by college students. College students, they want to improve their concentration, their focus, they want to get better grades, and so they take Algolol, right, because it's a new thing. But Algolol is addictive. And so these college students become addicted to Algolol. And it can also induce some mental health problems, too. So if you have niece or nephew or a child that's in college and you're noticing that they're starting to get depressed and they have bipolar disorder all of a sudden and they're experiencing showing some aggressive and hostile behavior, they may be on Algolol.
Dr. McClellan, I want to interrupt right here for just a minute because this is so important in observing our young people. Before you go, let me take a few minutes.
Sure.
And state this show is brought to you by New Africa Excellence. I want to slow down just a little bit and go over what our youth and young people are doing in the university systems or the education system, prior learning, in order to keep up. Some of them may be taking extended credits and so forth. So you're bringing up such an imperative point. Take your time and go over this. And, you know, I know you're going to speak about the warning signs that parents and friends that the community can look at. So please take your time. Don't feel rushed. We have plenty of time. Continue, please.
Right. So, yeah, just to add to the Algolol again, students are feeling pressured, you know, in society to do well, to excel. And they take, you know, recreational drugs to improve their mental, you know, advancement. And so what happens is not only Algolol, it's what students are taking. Students are becoming depressed, right? And so what they're doing also is they're drinking alcoholic beverages to help them cope. And so, you know, college students are pressured to do well. but they don't have the resources to cope. And those services aren't really being offered on these college campuses. You know, mental illness and depression and anxiety and all of those things, you know, we're gaining more traction in terms of attention, right? We're gaining it. We're becoming more awareness on campus. You know, we see this more. It's more prevalent in terms of awareness. But there are so many students who aren't, you know, in this, you know, helm of protection in terms of being aware and being in a, you know, culture where it's, you know, because when you have problems, you know, with mental illness, it's such a stigma. White people are stigmatized. Our students are stigmatized. They don't really have an outlet. They don't know where to go. So what do? They consume recreational drugs. And Aldol is just an example of one of those recreational drugs that people use. Like I said, it could be alcohol. It could be marijuana. It could be, it's opioids, right? Opioids, that's another discussion for another show, right? That's a whole other discussion. But this is what our students are doing to succeed. So I think this is something that tension is something that we need to really, you know, put our, wrap our heads around, try to figure out how we can help our young people because they just really, we need to be there for them. And not just in talking in theory, but in practice. And so, yeah, it's a very important subject, and one, it's one that doesn't need to be overlooked, and it's something that we, you know, we need to continue to have discussions on. And also, what I noticed in the younger population and the older populations as well, a lot of our students are taking Xanax, right? Because remember, they're on Adderall. Adderall is a stimulant. They need to get up. But they also need to get to sleep too, right? And so what they're doing is they're consuming Xanax. And Xanax, as you know, is, for some of you may know, may not know, it's a sedative. And it's primarily used for the treatment of anxiety disorders, right? But it's contraindicated in patients with glaucoma. It should never, ever be used in patients with a history of drug abuse. But college students, they're using drugs every day, just like the average American, right? Some of the drugs are prescribed and some aren't. And you're having a lot of young people mix drugs like Xanax with other types of drugs like opioids and alcohol and other central nervous system depressants. And guess what? It can cause, not guess what, tragically, it can cause severe sedation, respiratory disorders, coma, and people die, right? You hear about, and even death, right? Because you hear about people taking a mixture of Xanax, the opioid, and alcohol, and other central nervous system depressants, and they don't wake up. But it's by mistake, they overdose, but they don't do it intentionally. So this is something that we're seeing in our students as well. Hydrocodone and Vicodin. And, you know, people need to feel better. Sometimes they need it for severe pain, largely after surgery. People get addicted to these types of drugs after surgery, and they need it, right? They gain an addiction to it. And so that, you know, what happens is people have an increased risk for respiratory depression and significantly an increased risk of liver damage failure associated with this use. So I see people who are just popping Tylenol, they're taking Remedy, right? They just need to deal with the pain. But at the same time, their liver enzymes, the ALT and AST enzyme, liver enzyme levels are what they're increasing. And it's causing damage to the liver. And the liver is a very important organ to store and break down fat, as well as store glycogen, which is essential for energy. So there's a lot of implications and ramifications for abusing drugs, believe you me. And it's the whole, because the devote an entire segment to dangers of prescription drugs on the human body. And that is another subject that we can dedicate to that particular subject. So I just want to end my brief talk. So in conclusion, I just wanted to point out that these prescription drugs, they're used to treat many illnesses. Well, thank God for traditional medicine in many instances. It's needed. The question that we have to ask and think about, and I want this to be our takeaway to the audience, to new sisters who are in, and to everybody that's really listening, that the benefits outweigh the risks. Right? And that's something that you have to determine as a person. Again, traditional medicine, thank God for the intervention of it. But as you had stated earlier, Sister Selena, everything needs to be done with balance, with moderation, and just basic common sense, to be quite frank with you. Well, thank you. You know, that's a major takeaway. I want people in general from all of our communities, I don't care what community that you're from, I want us to start thinking about taking responsibility for our mental and physical health and fitness, not putting that responsibility in the hands of a physician, whether you're a psychiatrist, or your mother or your father, but placing that responsibility in your own hands. Your longevity depends on it. If you have not done that so far, it's time to change that today. Start making small sacrifices by just making healthier food choices. You know, pick up a book. I mean, put down a remote control for a minute. You don't have to watch Netflix and Hulu for hours. You know, pick up some of the books that I recommended in the discussion to put yourself with the knowledge that you need to make lifestyle changes. That, you know, put down that remote control. You know, go for a brisk walk or run, meditate. You know, the Hulu, the Netflix, you know, seeing them, it'll be there when you get that. I promise you, it'll be there. Take time to pray. Take time to meditate. Take on the sunrise. Take on the sunset. And enjoy life. That is my takeaway. Thank you so much.
The National Institute on Drug Abuse 2018 data shows that every day, this is 2018 and we're 2020 now, 128 people in the United States of America die after overdosing on opioids. The misuse and the addiction to opioids. Opioid is a synthetic drug such as fentanyl.
Yes.
So this is an alarming problem here in the United States. I wanted to just touch base because you spoke quite intensely on the prescription drugs. And I wanted to bring to the audience's attention supplemental alerts. There's a supplemental product called Prevagen. This is in the news. You can research it. It's produced by Quincy Bioscience. They currently have class action lawsuits. One was just settled in June of 2020, awarding over $165 million to individuals. The advertisement states that it helps memory, and you spoke specifically, Dr. Muhammad, about memory loss, and as we get older, can happen. When they first created the drug, it was based on a protein found in jellyfish that glow called aquaporin.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an aquamarine type of drug. It's not a drug. It's used from the jellyfish. The original formulation was presented as a drug, but the company decided not to get FDA approval because it didn't want to wait 10 years to get approval. So it was introduced to the public as a supplement, and it's a billion-dollar supplement. But the FDA started an investigation based on adverse reaction.
Sure.
And there's a pattern. The FDA is still studying it, so there's no conclusive evidence as of yet, but they are studying the patterns. And the synthetic portion of it, or the jellyfish portion of it, was staged to say how is calcium used in the body. But when you do research, as you get older, calcification is what causes memory loss. So they're producing it in the laboratory, and in the laboratory they're not following FDA standards. You can have, as we just discussed, Dr. Muhammad, FDA drugs that are killing people. So if you have a supplement produced and you have bacteria criteria that's not being followed, this can serve as a danger. So my point to the audience, be careful about supplemental products. This particular product, again, is being investigated by the Food and Drug Administration for some of the adverse effects. Now, that is a formulation of supplemental products. And so I just, overall, Dr. Muhammad, just following that diet, because when we ingest medication, that affects our diet. So, yes, we may have genomes to say that predisposition us to certain diseases, but here you're using drugs and various formulations that could be causing heart attack and stroke and increasing these rates. So we must be very careful. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. And just to add to what you're saying about the calcification, again, like I'm no expert in calcification. That's not my area of research. But knowing a little bit about calcification, you know, as you get older, as you stated, calcification increases, right? And so calcium, you know, calcification is just the buildup of calcium in different parts of the body. And we usually see that mostly calcium deposits in bones and in teeth, right? And so sometimes calcification just happens through a natural progression of like an older, you know, the buildup of calcium, you'll see it in the bones, maybe around your rib cage, in your legs and other parts of your body is natural. So, I mean, what you're referencing with that particular supplement that you mentioned is that calcification builds up in the brain. And we know that calcification, as you had mentioned, you know, it shouldn't be in the brain. That's not where it should be, right? Calcification in the brain, you'll see that in some neurological disorders. It causes dementia. Calcification in the brain causes mood disorders. It can cause seizures. And so it really results from something called hypercalcemia. And that can happen from, parathyroid disease and things of that nature. And so that's just what Tanina has stated. You know, with these over-the-counter drugs, they're not regulated by the FDA. So you must, you know, engage in your due diligence to ensure that you do your own homework. Again, that goes back to taking accountability and responsibility for yourself. And this is something that, as a people, we don't like to do. You point saying that it's somebody else's problem, but it's never your problem. It's always somebody else's, and when you do that, you're losing it in because, you know, you have to take responsibility for your hand in all of this. And so you bring a very good point about the calcification. There's a lot of products out here that you have to be really, really careful about. And so take action and take responsibility for your own health and your own wellness. It really is life or death, to be quite frank with you.
It really is. And in this particular product, it's not so much that the studies of the aquaporin, you know, can treat diseases like MS and so forth. This is not where the problem is. The problem is that they're making it a synthetic. They're not even pulling the natural substance or the natural formulation. Mm-hmm. Individuals are not even getting so it's false advertisement. So
that
after that false advertisement is what
fabrication.
Exactly. And it's $1 billion business. $1 billion business.
Oh yes it is. Oh yes it is.
What specifically, Dr. Nadir, would you like the listening audience to take with them today?
I mean, to be honest with you, I can enunciate and highlight enough to take more responsibility. I'm going to say it again and again. It's your responsibility to ensure that you're happy, to ensure that you have mental and physical stability. Your longevity, again, depends on it. You know, make healthier choices. Just really take the time to think about some of the things that you're doing in your life that's causing you heartache, whether it's a bad relationship, and whether you need to create more healthy boundaries to keep crazy people away from you. And why am I saying that? And I'm joking about it, but I'm actually serious about that as well, because that it does affect your mental stability.
So
taking time, you know, it really is. It's just maybe taking on less projects. You may be the matriarch or the patriarch of the family, and expectations may be high. But you know, for your own wellness and well-being, you have to separate yourself from all of that sometimes. And so, just, you know, like I said, make some small sacrifices that eventually add up to big sacrifices, and that will, you know, enable you to live the life that you've always wanted to live and envision. So that's the takeaway. Pick up a book. Learn more about yourself. You know, take time to, like I said, embrace a walk on the beach and all these things that you want to do to make yourself healthier. You don't have to be, it doesn't have to be doing the groom. Some of us have chronic conditions, and I know some of us are really, really sick. We really are, and we need some of these medications. But there are things that we can do to make our lives better. And I just want us to start taking more responsibility for what we become. Because honestly, we're the accumulation or the cumulative effect of our decisions, right, from our choices. And so we are our decisions. We are our choices. You know, we have the ability to change ourselves right now, not tomorrow, not the day after, right this minute. And so I implore all of us to start making changes. So thank you for that. Yes, that's what I would advise and admonish.
Dr. Muhammad, you're with us once a month. What are some of the exciting community projects you're engaged in?
Oh, wow. So, actually, currently, I'm working on a community-based COVID-19 clinical trial where
all our agents are new to all of us.
Yes, our team is evaluating the relationship between PAPS-Immune and the use of COVID-19. Now, PAPS-Immune is a protein, right? And we know in the research that there are certain proteins out there that are used as antivirals that help mitigate, that assist in mitigating the effects of COVID-19. Some of these proteins, you know, prevent COVID-19, and some of these proteins treat COVID-19. And so we are looking at, you know, we want to be able to tell our story from a community perspective. We want to talk about how safe and effective that this treatment is with no side effects. I mean, we want to tell our own story. So we're in the process of pitching our community-based clinical trial with some academic research centers that we are looking to partner with. We haven't done that yet, and I'm not going to make that announcement, but we're in the process of collaborating with other institutions. We have many patients or many participants from the community who have started the treatment, who have provided us with their various testimonials, and it is a treatment. It's a supplement. It does work. It is safe. It is effective. There are many publications on this particular product. So if anybody is interested in learning more about this community-based COVID-19 study and the use of PAPS-Immune as a treatment and as a prevention, email me at drnadiamuhammad1@gmail.com. That's drnadiamuhammad1@gmail.com. And so, yes, that's one of the projects that I'm actually working on. And so it's life-changing. It's an opportunity of a lifetime. And by God's grace and permission, we're actually saving lives. So thank you for asking.
Yes, ma'am. This is so important, especially in the midst of this pandemic.
Yes, and also there's an additional project that I'm working on, which the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan had donated thousands of dollars for our NGT from the Nation of Islam to sew 70,000 masks to the community for free. And so as of today, there have been 30,000 masks disseminated to the community and distributed by the FOI to the various communities across the country. This is for all communities. COVID-19 is not a black problem. It's not a white problem. It's everybody's problem. And so we are embarking on some humanitarian efforts. And actually, I was able to sew some masks myself.
They were beautiful, doctor.
It's been a very rewarding experience just to be able to get back in that way. And so I thank Allah for that. And I really am very grateful and indebted to the Honorable Institute of Farrakhan for donating the monetary portion of it so that we can disseminate the mass in the community on a larger scale.
You know, this is so beautiful. And, you know, in some of the research, the mass, you know, especially when you're going out and you're being among people who may not be tested for the virus, have saved thus far approximately over 75,000 lives.
Mm-hmm.
In one particular state, which is the state of Arizona. So I thought that was interesting. Now, I'll remember to go up higher again because people don't listen and doing it. You know, things that they're not supposed to be doing. They're going to gyms. They're going to restaurants. They're just not cultivating discipline among the pandemic. You know, people are trying to act as if there is no pandemic. And this pandemic is very real. So thank you, Dr. Muhammad, for your contribution. This is so important.
You're welcome. I was making one correction. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Absolutely.
I just want to, not a correction, but I want you to ensure that, you know, the community-based clinical trial that I'm working on, that trial was, it's being launched by our primary investigator, Dr. Abdul Aleem Muhammad. He's spearheading the project. I'm serving as the primary project coordinator, project manager for the study. And I oversee clinical trials in general. You know, as a living, that's what I do. I oversee clinical trials. But Dr. Aleem, you know, he has a track record in the field of medicine, the field of HIV/AIDS. He's been a researcher for over 50 years. He's been a medical practitioner for over, I would say, about 50 years. And I wanted to be clear, and I did not want to be remiss in my duty, that, you know, he is launching this project and actually pulling me in as his collaborator to ensure that we, you know, get this trial out to our community so that we can save the lives of all people. Again, this is for all people. And so I just wanted to add that so that we are aware of, you know, who is the primary investigator on the study. I am a co-investigator, but I'm not the primary investigator.
Thank you, doctor. And I know you have some student youth involved in this. This is absolutely phenomenal. Can you talk about that just for 2 seconds?
Yes, we have a student. Her name is Marianne Muhammad. She is at Rutgers University, New Brunswick, New Jersey, excuse me. And she's also, she's studying pre-med, that's her background, in biology, pre-med, as well as a joint degree in public health. And so we're using Marianne, you know, just not using her, but we're utilizing her skill set. And to sort of teach her about how to conduct a clinical trial. Marianne is very bright. She's in the process of collating some literature so that we can do a meta-analysis and a literature review on the safetiness and effectiveness of low-dose or alpha interferon and beta interferon. And she's been pulling and collating all the literature and research articles on those studies. And bringing that to light, and we've been including that information, that background information, into the study protocol. So she's played a very instrumental role, and she's doing an internship with the War Immunity Project, community-based clinical trial, and that's the name of the project, War Immunity Project, community-based clinical trial. But actually, War Immunity Project at gmail.com. If you're interested in learning more about enrolling in the study and you want to learn more about Paxlovid, which is a protein to treat and prevent COVID-19, you can visit yourimmunityproject at gmail.com. That's Y-O-U-R immunity, I-N-N-U-N-I-T-Y, project, J-E-C-T, excuse me, at gmail.com. So, yeah.
Excellent. Can you just, before we leave, describe what a meta-analysis is? I know as a PhD student myself, it is a combination study, but if you can give the listening audience a little more direction as to what that study is doing and the type of formulations that they're addressing within that study.
So many of the studies, when you do a meta-analysis, it's just like you had mentioned, it's a combination of all the studies that are out there in the literature that's been conducted on, you know, the use of interferon and COVID-19. Or we're looking at interferon on different viruses, not just COVID-19, the effect that it has on retroviruses in general, on HIV, hepatitis, and some forms of cancer. And we're basically looking at these various studies, and we're compiling an analysis, and we're comparing and we're contrasting. We're looking for similarities, we're looking for differences, we're looking for significance, we're looking for insignificance, and we're sort of putting that together and coming up with our own conclusion. So meta analysis is just a correlation or combination of various studies on a particular subject, based on the fact that a treatment should be. Okay, and then our focus really is on alpha interferon, beta interferon, and the treatment of COVID-19 with some other studies like HIV and hepatitis, primarily COVID-19.
Thank you so much, Dr. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Okay,
thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you all.
I want to state to the audience that this program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent, LaRod Speaks. Before we close, Dr. Muhammad, if we could do close out a refuge prayer.
Yes. I want to close out for the listening audience who are familiar with the Holy Quran. It is a chapter entitled Al-Falaq, the Dawn. And I think it's appropriate for us to close out in this prayer. We're living in a very dark time. We have to seek refuge in Allah, our Creator. If you call him Jehovah, whatever what name you call him, we must seek refuge in him to get us through this dark hour. I won't say this in Arabic. My Arabic is not great. Actually, my Arabic might be good. So I'm going to be citing English. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent and Merciful, say, I seek refuge in the Lord of the Dawn from the evil of that which he has created, and from the evil of intense darkness when it comes, and from the evil of those who cast evil suggestions and firm resolutions, and from the evil of the envier when he envies. Amen.